You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's on the Jump Show.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome to the AME Radio Show, the show that is the voice of artists and entertainers everywhere. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys today. So sit back, relax, and enjoy as we talk about everything art, music, and entertainment. But before we get into anything, though, go check out our websites, www.theamemagazine.com. While you're there, you'll be able to see everything that is about the AME experience on our magazine, television, and radio show. And you'll also be able to see all the links to our social media platforms. Please like us, follow us, or do whatever you need to do. We want to have you included in that and be in the conversation there as well. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you name it. We're on it. Also, you can download our free app for the Apple or Android platform. We encourage you to do that too. It keeps you in the know. You also get push notifications on who's coming out. And then we also have our newsletter you can sign up for as well. Okay, so, you know, this is the second week of January. We're really excited because football's right around the corner here. Well, not football, but the Super Bowl is right around the corner. So we are just about ready to see all those crazy commercials. And I got to admit, they haven't been as good as they used to be in the past. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the PC crowd that's kind of toning things down, but I've been seeing a lot of political agendas pushed inside of these commercials, and I'd much rather see something fun and stupid. You know, that's why I watch it. But I also watch it to see my team win, and hopefully your team is still in it. We are in the divisional round this week, so the wild card weekend is over, and that means the Patriots, the Chiefs, the Saints, and the Rams are going to be hosting the other teams. So we're going to get to see that. And then whoever wins out of these will go to the NFC and AFC championship game. It's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, so today we have a couple of great guests coming up. Like I said, our first one is Michael J. Bowler. He is a sci-fi novelist, and he has written a book called Children of the Night, K-N-I-G-H-T. He has done a lot of low-budget horror films. He's also done a lot of screenplays. And he also taught high school, so his books are really interesting. I cannot wait to get into that with him. I think you guys are going to fall in love with it. Then we have Spence Reed coming up. He is an eclectic sounding artist. He goes from rock to pop to blues to R&B. So there's something for everybody in his music. I like that. You know, he's not just to one genre. He's got a little bit of feel for everything. So if you like rock and you like jazz, you like him. If you like them together, you're going to like them. And if you like a little bit of everything, you're going to like them too. And he just put a brand new single out called I Want You To. And we're going to be playing that here at the end of the interview. So you're not going to want to miss that. So we got a lot of great music coming up. And then I'm going to be introducing a brand new single coming out here from Sebastian Azul coming up in just a few minutes. But before we go into any of the music or the guests, I want to talk to you guys about something that it just kind of hit home today because I was reminded of this. Now, we see a lot of stuff that's happening out there, violence, you know, towards people, bullying, all kinds of different things. Now, I have been bullied my entire life. You can't imagine the isolation I have gone through and the physical and mental abuse that I have received since I was in school. Now, it kind of got released when I was, it toned down when I was in high school, when I got out of high school, but it's still there. So I'm going to give you guys a little bit of advice that I learned from my karate instructor when I was up in Connecticut. He said this: when you're inside of a conflict, you always try to talk your way out of it. That's the first thing you do. You try to diffuse the situation with your voice and your words. Use wisdom. Do not lose your mind. Keep control of your emotions and talk to them one-on-one and try to explain the situation. Diffuse it there. If you can't do that, you try to walk away because you're not going to have any success there. No matter what you say, it's not going to go away. This person's still heated and you're still in danger. So try to walk away. If you cannot walk away, then you must defend yourself with every passion that you have. And that means physical attacks in order to protect yourself, but never take the first shot. You know, I lived by those my entire life, and I have diffused a lot of situations that came from bullies. Not too long ago, you may have seen it on the radio, the television, and the news. You may not have. And that was when we had a squatter that living across the street from us. Well, one night, he came over there. He was high as a kite on some type of crystal meth. He had a bat, and he was prepared to not only kill me, but kill my wife, too. And he came to the door and tried to get in my house. And what I did is I had no weapon. I was the only thing I had was my strawberry shortcake pop from Good Humor. I put it down. I walked out the door. I got right in his face, looked him straight in the eye. I was scared to death. I will not lie. But I didn't let him see it. And I looked at him eye to eye and said, "You have one shot with that bat. You better kill me on it. If you do not, it will be your worst mistake you've ever made." That's all I said. I gave him a threat that I wasn't going to back down. I didn't have a weapon, and he knew that. He did. He realized that I'm not joking here, and something's wrong with this situation. He came at me with, and I have a bat. He came at me and is threatening me. Now, I had no intention of hitting him. I didn't want to hit him at all. But there's no way I could be able to talk to him because he was not right mentally because of the drugs he was on. So what he ended up doing was backing away. It was the only thing he knew what to do. I diffused the situation by using my brain, not losing my cool, and also using my words. Had I not been able to diffuse the situation like that, I would have had to get away. I would walk away. And then I was prepared that if that didn't work, I was going to have to fight for my life. So that's one of the things. If you're a bully or you know somebody that is being bullied, tell them that information. You know, because words hurt. Yes, they do. But you can't let them get to your soul. You can't let them get to your heart. If you do that and you give back and you start attacking them back, that's what gives them the power. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for you to react to it. When they don't get a reaction out of it, 90% of the time they walk away. Sometimes they get a little bit more gruff, like what this man did, and then's when I had to take it to the next step, but I still used my words. I used my brain. I did not lose my cool. But I was prepared to walk away, and I was also prepared to fight if I needed to. So that's my little advice to start off the new year, because I see a lot more bullying going on in school now. I've been seeing it on the news. I've been seeing it on Facebook. Stop and think about how to deal with this safely, okay? All right, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to introduce our brand new artist that's coming on. His name is Sebastian Azul. His song name is Mental Health Warriors, and I thought this would be a great song to kind of complement what I just talked about. His name is, he's an independent upcoming awareness artist, songwriter, and producer. He's based in the UK. He was born in Angola and raised in England. He decided to become an artist to raise awareness and empower others living and struggling with mental health and neurological disorders. I love this. He's using music to do it. "Most of my music is intended to inform, educate, motivate, and comfort others." That's what he said. Guys, we're going to be playing right here, Mental Health Warriors, right now. We're going to go to a quick commercial break after that, and when we come back, we're going to have Michael J. Ballard on the line. So don't worry.
Awareness is power.
Now, ladies and gentlemen and children, before the commercial break, I mentioned an extraordinary awareness indie group who call themselves MHW, which stands for Mental Health Warriors. They're here and they're going to perform for us right now. I think the main question that people have is, guys, what sort of awareness are you all speaking of?
Drifting in despair, using anything I can get. Temporary
temporary repair. Just trying to be me, but I'm living in fear. Yeah, I have a family, but most of them don't care. Admitting I'm suffering from anxiety and depression. To the likes of my family, it's out of the question. Especially for a man, so I swallow my confession. Nobody understands that I isolate for protection. My brain is a servant, agoraphobia holds me prisoner. Birds at my porch and they are my only visitor. Fake facial expressions play like I'm staying strong. Go through my music collection, seeking relatable songs. Drinking problems away till my brew starts to taste strong. Slurring my speech and steady your feet, I'm way gone. I thought I was close to my family, but they just gone. Mental health is up and down ever since you bailed, y'all.
Meine Schwäche, Gefühle hoch und runter, ja ihr wisst wovon ich spreche. Manche kriegen's hin, doch vielen fällt es schwer. Ich hab so viel Familie und seh doch kein Licht mehr. Das geht an jeden Menschen, Not ergreift das Angebot. Mit dem Ärger Luft, dann siehst du nicht mehr rot. Platzangst, Depression, Furcht und Schlaflosigkeit. Ganz egal was es auch ist, man sagt über Zeit. Wunden können heilen, hör auf mich, sei bereit. Ich weiß, sie denken alle, wir sind verrückt oder aggressiv. Wir sind gebrannt, deshalb sag ich's massiv. Und ich hab erst angefangen und bin dann lange nicht am Ende. Zwangsneurose, Angstzustände, Bipolarität. Die geistige Gesundheit ist, was für uns ist.
This is what I call music. Absolutely
Let's
brilliant.
Talk about mental
disorders.
Mental
disorders. ADHD.
ADHD.
Autism.
Autism.
Tourette's syndrome.
Tourette's syndrome.
Bulimia.
Bulimia.
Depression.
Depression.
Schizophrenia.
Schizophrenia.
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Addiction.
Addiction.
Self-harm.
Cutting.
Bipolar. OCD. Panic disorder. ODD. PTSD.
Schizophrenia.
Agoraphobia. DID. PDA. Anorexia. Biological fear facing life. Remember, you have never struggled with death. You are not alone. Rainy weathers don't last forever. Hang in there, puppy. It will all be alright. It will be alright.
Gladdy, the dachshund, the face of Gladdy's goodies. Are you worried about your pet's health? My parents were too, especially since I developed pancreatitis. They couldn't find any treats I could eat, so they made some. Our natural treats are healthy for all dogs, with and without health issues. We have lots of delicious flavors like chicken, turkey, salmon, sweet potato, beef, and more. With our homemade treats, you won't worry about the contents because they have no chemicals, fillers, or bad ingredients. Go to GladdysGoodies.com now to get your fur friend a bag. And pick them up some swag while you're there. You'll be glad you did. Remember, we have the treats and swag to make their tails wag. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com. Again, that's GladdysGoodies.com.
Hi, I'm Paulina Lagudi. I'm the creator of Mail Order Monster, releasing November 6th on demand.
Hi, this is Serena Palmer from Radio Rebel, and you're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. His name is Michael J. Bowler. He's an award-winning author who just released his brand new novel, Children of the Night. And it's not the night like you think of. It's K-N-I-G-H-T. He's also a low-budget horror film creator. He's also written stage plays. And he has one middle grade and three young adult novels to his name. So he's got a lot of creativity going through his body and through his mind. And we're excited to talk to him about all this and how he got into writing. And, of course, talk about his brand new book. So welcome to the show, Michael. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jason. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us. And, you know, that's always something fun that we love here at the AME Radio Show.
Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to chatting with you.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself. When did you get into writing? When did you start? Did you start when you were in school and go into any contests or anything like that?
I was always an avid reader growing up as a child, and I just loved writing. Also, I was writing little stories in elementary school, writing stories in high school. So it's just always been something that I have done. I don't even know where it began. It's just a passion.
What kind of stories did you enjoy when you were growing up and reading? And even to this day, what are some of your favorite favorite topics?
My favorite authors, you say?
Stuff that you like that really interests you when you read.
Oh, well, I do like reading books involving teenagers. I've spent most of my life working with teenagers and young people, and I find it's an interesting time period in our lives. And I like reading stories that challenge teenagers to think in different ways. And even me as an adult, I love reading that kind of thing because I feel like it keeps me young, but it's what I write, and so I enjoy reading it.
Now, when you were, when you were growing up, even today, I see that you do a lot of stuff. You've done some low-budget horror films and stuff. Was horror one of the genres that you like to read about and write about?
Yes. Horror has always been a passion of mine also. Much to my parents' chagrin, they couldn't understand why I liked horror movies and read books like Stephen King, right? They didn't understand that, and they didn't like it, but I've just always been drawn to that. One of my favorite shows as a young child was Dark Shadows, which was kind of a spooky afternoon soap opera about vampires and werewolves and witches. I was addicted to that.
That's interesting. Who are some of your favorite authors as far as horror genres go?
Well, probably Stephen King would be my favorite. I've also read Whitley Strieber. I've read some of his books, and Robert McCammon. So there's a few that come to my mind that I enjoy.
You know, one of the things that I've seen with horror movies and horror books and everything like that is that you can be as creative as you want, and sometimes the crazier the story, the more entertaining it is. So, when you write horror, what are some of the things you try to incorporate with your storylines?
Well, I try to tell a story that I haven't seen myself about 100 times already. Mm-hmm. I mean, they say there are no really new stories, but at least new angles on old ideas is a good way to go. And so I try to do something different. And I do have a horror novel out there that is called Spinner. And all of the characters in it have a disability. I've been a high school teacher and taught kids with disabilities. And so all of these characters are very unique in that they have some kind of disability and they can't read or write, but they have to solve this mystery and keep from getting killed and preventing other people from getting killed. But they have to do it without the regular skills that you see in most of these horror films.
Now, what about the intellectual thrillers and stuff? Because, you know, sometimes that's just as scary as some of these horror movies where they actually play mind games and you know, go back and forth with you that way. That to me seems just as scary or sometimes scarier than some of these typical horror movies and horror novels that you'd see. And it makes you think.
Oh, no, I agree with you completely. Those I love. I like, because I'm not into gore. I mean, there's a horror genre that's just really gore and people, you know, a mass murderer going around and killing people. That's not my thing. I do prefer something that's more intellectually challenging and mysterious, and especially if it's really well written and the plot adds up, you know, once you get to the end, it's like, wow, this happened earlier that set this whole thing up, and it's so clever. Like The Sixth Sense was a great example of an awesome horror script.
Mm-hmm. Now, where do you get some of your inspiration from when you decide you're going to write something?
Usually just from my life experience. As I mentioned, I've worked with a lot of kids in different genres and different venues. I have been worked many, many years in the juvenile justice department and worked with incarcerated kids. I've taught high school for many years. I've worked with middle grade kids and younger kids in other volunteer situations. And they really, they give me ideas. They give me the impetus to write a story about some of maybe their experiences they've shared with me.
Hmm. You know, I love asking authors this because it varies from person to person. And one of the things that I've always seen with books is sometimes they use you know, really large words, and sometimes it's hard for people because they don't know all these words, so they got to go to a dictionary and look it up. I mean, it's amazing to read, and it's just fun to read like that, but they don't always understand the words. What do you prefer in terms of writing? Should people use words that are a little bit more complex? I mean, because in ways we do learn from it, but in the other ways, it can kind of distract from the story depending on who's reading it, I think. What's your opinion on that?
I absolutely agree with you 100%. I think that, I mean, especially I've been a teacher and I've had kids, you know, reading. We've read books together at school and class. And when they come to words that stop them dead in the story and they don't understand it and you can't figure out the context, from the context, what the meaning is, it's very distracting. So I do think in fiction, we should strive to write, use as mostly words that the average person will know, and, you know, save the higher caliber words for the more intellectual writing or nonfiction.
Mm. It makes sense because, you know, I one of the things I love is The Great Gatsby, and I know it was written in the 20s, and it was written by an extremely, you know, prolific guy that had an extraordinary vocabulary, but it was hard to read, and it's just because of the fact that there was that time frame where they spoke differently to begin with. But then on top of it, the words were bigger, and if you weren't quite used to that, it could be very hard to read the book, but it's a great book no matter what.
No, it is a great book, but that's part of what the reality is back in those days when he wrote that book, that kind of language was more typical. Our education system was better. People understood those words. Nowadays, they don't. I mean, young people, we use The Great Gatsby still in high school. Yeah, we have to do all this vocabulary preloading because they're not going to know what any of these words are.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a shame too, because I think that kind of is something that's important. You know, it is a way of talking, and it's supposed to always use in slang. Sometimes those words are a little bit more elegant, and they are, you know, more dignified in ways. But we seem to lose that because of the way we speak.
I agree with you. We've rather dumbed ourselves down, I think, in America, and it's partly education system, and it's partly the entertainment that we have because it's so prevalent. The movies and television shows and music, and they don't use that kind of language anymore in these shows and movies and songs. So kids, young people, even adults are not exposed to them.
Yeah, and I think that's something I would like to see change eventually, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
I don't think so. I think you're right on that one.
So tell me a little bit about your book here, because I got so many questions. I don't know really where to jump with. You know what? Before we get into your book, I love that you also written low budget horror films, and that you also were stage plays. You know, there's such a dynamic difference in how they're written. Was that a challenge for you?
It is always a challenge because you have to visualize things differently and present them differently. And it's interesting that Children of the Night originated as a screenplay. That's how it started. And then I turned it into a novel. Well, it's a totally different process because with a screenplay, the director and the art director and all that, they're going to really do most of the visualization, and you don't need to describe as much of the action. You can just say there's a chase down the street, and, you know, and then it's all staged. But in a book, of course, you have to do all of that detail. You've got to paint that picture for the reader that the director is going to do in a movie. And same with a stage play. You have to, both of those, you have to be able to get what's going on inside the character purely through action and dialogue. There's no, you're never going to know what he's thinking or she's thinking, not in a movie or a play. So it is a challenge. It, in many ways, it's more difficult to do that. You have to be more creative to figure out a visual way to show what's going on inside the character.
What made you decide to do one? Because I know that, you know, it's always fun to visualize your stories into movies and stuff like that. But, you know, to actually physically put one together, what gave you the inspiration to do that?
Well, I also, besides reading, I loved movies when I was growing up. And I did get my bachelor's degree. I was in theater and English. And then I went and got a master's degree in film production from Loyola Marymount University, because it was an area that I was interested in, particularly the screenwriting. And it was just because I liked writing and I liked movie making and I liked movies. So I thought it was an area I would give it a try and see if I could make a go of it.
See, I love that. You know, a lot of people get distracted or get, you know, intimidated by things, and you actually decided to give it a shot. And, you know, that's awesome. You know, I see so many people giving up on stuff, so I'm glad you went for it. And did it come out exactly the way you wanted it? And did you get the fulfillment from it?
Well, it was fun. Making the low-budget horror movies was a lot of fun. But it's not very profitable in the, you know,
right.
You don't really get too far with it. And in terms of, you know, making a living, I ended up teaching high school because I that was another passion of mine, to work with kids, and I always thought about being a teacher. It's interesting that I had all these passions and ideas, and I was able to try out so many of them and do them, which was great. But so I did enjoy making the films, but it just, you know, it was, I couldn't make a living doing it.
Sure. So tell me a little bit about your book now, because then, you know, this sounds like a really cool book. It's called Children of the Night, and it's called K-N-I-G-H-T. So tell me a little bit about the background of the book.
Well, the background of the book really stems from my experiences working with incarcerated kids, gang members, working with the kids at the high school I worked at, which could be both. I mean, they often overlap. Sometimes the kids that I would teach in school would end up in the juvenile hall, or sometimes they were gang members in the neighborhoods that I worked. That's just a reality. And so I wanted to tell a story that humanized these kids, because in this country we have a very throwaway mentality. In my view, we created a society that marginalizes all of these kids, makes them feel not wanted, pushes them like out into the street. But then when they get in trouble, we go, oh, well, now we have to throw them away, put them in prison, lock them up, get them out of sight, out of mind. And that, it really angered me, because I met so many of these kids. I worked with them, and they were amazing, amazing people that everyone else would tell me, why do you spend your time with those kids? They're criminals. They're bad. I go, no, they're not. You don't know them. And so I wanted to write this book, this whole series, because it's the first book of a five-book series. It really is all one long story. I wanted to humanize these kids, and so that readers who would never met someone like that might come to understand that, hey, I haven't walked in his shoes, so I really should not be throwing stones.
That's true. And, you know, they are marginalized very easily, because, you know, people don't want to deal with that stuff, and it's easier to write them off than it is to rehabilitate and give them a purpose, because that takes work, and I don't think people like to do that too much.
No, you're correct, and that's the problem with our education system. We want to throw them away. We want to kick kids out, expel them, move them, get rid of them. We don't want to actually take the time to figure out what's going on in their lives and help them fix it so that they can fit in and get an education and get their lives on track. We don't want to do that.
Now, with the education system, I know that that's kind of a basis about this, but what about just, you know, passing kids? You know, you see kids every day that cannot read, cannot write, but yet they are graduating high school. And I think that kind of sets them up for failure. Why aren't we taking the time as society to make sure that they understand that, so they don't get frustrated and act out as a young adult and do bad things? Because almost 90% of the people that seem to be end up incarcerated can't read or write, and that's a problem.
No, you are 100% correct. Most of those kids that I've worked with were poor readers or were special ed. But again, the problem is that education, the system is one size must fit all. If you don't fit, we want to get rid of you. And they don't want to deal with kids that are weaker than others in certain areas or can't handle the curriculum. We make this idiotic assumption that here's this curriculum that were created by bureaucrats, and somehow every single kid has to be able to master it. Well, that doesn't make sense, because we're not the same. We're all different. And they pass kids along. I mean, I remember getting kids in high school. They would have very, you know, unusual or even disturbing behaviors. And I couldn't figure out where it came from. And I'd go back and I'd look at their CUME folder from the first grade on, and the behaviors were there in the first grade. He was moved on to the second grade. The third, behaviors continued and escalated. No treatment. Nothing was done. And so then by the time they get to high school, it's accelerated a lot. And then the kids are getting in trouble, and they're getting arrested, and they're going to juvenile hall. And it's all because the system doesn't want to deal with individuals. It just wants that group think. You all have to be the same. We're going to move you all on and then move on to the next group. That's how it thinks.
I see. That's terrible. And I knew some kids that were suffering in school, and they were having a hard time. And, you know, they got suspended a lot. They had issues and stuff. And, you know, it made it harder for them. And a lot of them, unfortunately, dropped out because they just didn't think they were smart enough. But I think they were smart enough, just nobody gave them the time or found an alternative way to educate them.
So that's absolutely true. Most of the kids that drop out, they drop out because school is not useful to them. They're not getting what they need. We want to keep everybody the same, and we're not the same. So in my view, it's not hard to change, except that the system doesn't want to change. But, you know, you work with the kids that have the strengths. You focus on their strengths. You try to shore up their weaknesses, but not everybody needs to go to Harvard. Not everybody needs to go to university. There's a place for everybody in this world and in this country, and we need to just help the kids find out what they're best at, and then keep moving them along so that they can succeed at that area that they like and they're good at. But we don't do that because it's too complicated. It's difficult. You know, it's difficult to differentiate your instruction and to really help kids as individuals.
So with the book, what do you hope that people take away from it when they read it?
Well, I hope that they will see, again, as I mentioned, these kinds of kids that are very marginalized, and not see when they read in the paper about a teenager who was arrested, and the media is extremely one-sided. They don't do their homework. They never examine what led up to that arrest. Why was that child arrested? They also paint the story like he or she is guilty. And as we know, we're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty, but not with the juveniles. They are always said to be guilty in the media. And people read that and they think, oh, they're terrible. They're terrible. They're horrible kids, and they should be, we should throw them away. We should put them in prison for life. And I just want people to understand that they are not like that. And there are reasons why they're in trouble. There are reasons why they're on the street. I mean, there's in this Children of the Night series, there are prominent gay teenagers. That's another area, group of kids is extremely marginalized in this country. They're very marginalized. I've worked with a lot of these kids, amazing kids, great kids, but people that don't know them just want to marginalize them. It's just easy to do. And so that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping if people read it, especially young people, that's why I aim the books at young people. I want them to meet these kids and get to understand them a little bit better, even though they may never have met anyone like that in their life.
I like that. And, you know, one of the things that I've always been strong on is helping people just succeed in what they do, you know, and inspiring them to do it, because I know that there's so many different ways of learning things and dealing with people, and not everybody learns the same way. Not everybody does things the same way. Not everybody thinks the same way. But, you know, unfortunately, those that don't seem to fall through the cracks, and that's where I've always tried to inspire myself, and I'm glad that your book is trying to do the same thing, and also showing people that, you know, there is an alternative way to help them, and, you know, that just because they don't necessarily walk the walk or talk the talk like we do doesn't mean that they're garbage either.
Exactly. That really is at the heart of the whole series, and the other big theme in it is that in America we have this notion that children are property. They're property of parents, they're property of caregivers, they're property of government, they're property of schools. And they're not. They're human beings, and they're all unique, and they all have a soul, a mind, a heart. They are not mini-me's, and they are not property. I mean, I have a son at home who I'm in the process of adopting, he is not my property. He is his own self, and I need to allow him to be his own self, but just try to work with him to help him be the best version of himself that he can be. And that's my job as a teacher or as a volunteer or anything else, is not to try to make everybody the same.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, this has been a lot of fun, very educational too. I mean, I hope that this wakes people up to what's going on in our society, our kids, and our school. I know you've written a lot of other books and stuff. Where can people follow you and see what you've got going on? Any books and where can they buy your books and see what else is going on in your life?
Well, if they look for me on Amazon, Michael J. Bowler meets the J. I have an Amazon page and it lists all my books. And I have a website, michaeljbowler.com, and I've got blog posts up there and people can read a little bit more about my books and what I have done and in those blog posts. And yeah, they can find the books at Amazon primarily. And the Kindle Unlimited also has them.
Fantastic. Well, Michael, thank you for coming on and being such a great guest and you know, hopefully educating the people that are listening today. And I think that's very important.
Well, thank you, Jason. I really have enjoyed chatting with you, and I appreciate you giving me the time to come on.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have to get you back on if you ever decide to write any more books or anything else that you got coming out.
Well, I've always got more books written. I just have to gotta find a home for them.
I hear that. Well, thank you, and we wish you all the best in 2019. And We'll talk hopefully in the next year sometime.
Great. Thank you so much, Jason. Happy New Year to you.
You too. Okay, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back. Just don't go anywhere. We got more.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual. Fantasy creatures or urban legends? Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd